Blog Talk Radio.
The New York Jets. No, I'm going to hold you to an answer on that. What makes America the greatest country in the world?
Well, Lewis and Sharon said it, diversity and opportunity and freedom and freedom.
I'm not letting you go back to the airport without answering the question.
Well, our Constitution is a masterpiece. James Madison was a genius. The Declaration of Independence is, for me, the single greatest piece of American writing.
You don't look satisfied.
One's a set of laws and the other's a declaration of war. I want a human moment from you. What about the people? Why is America
not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer.
You're saying...
Yes.
Let's talk about...
Fine. Sharon, the NEA is a loser. Yeah, it accounts for a penny out of our paycheck, but he gets to hit you with it any time he wants. It doesn't cost money. It costs votes. It costs airtime and column inches. You know why people don't like liberals? Because they lose. If liberals are so fucking smart, how come they lose so goddamn always?
Hey.
And with a straight face, you're going to tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom? Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yeah, you, sorority girl, just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only 3 categories. Number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period, generation, period, ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Yosemite? Sure used to be. We stood up for what was right. We fought for moral reasons. We passed laws, struck down laws for moral reasons. We waged wars on poverty, not poor people. We sacrificed. We cared about our neighbors. We put our money where our mouths were, and we never beat our chest. We built great big things, made ungodly technological advances, explored the universe, cured diseases, and we cultivated the world's greatest artists and the world's greatest economy. We reached for the stars, acted like men. We aspired to intelligence. We didn't belittle it. It didn't make us feel inferior. We didn't identify ourselves by who we voted for in the last election, and we didn't scare so easy. We were able to be all these things and do all these things because we were informed by great men, men who were revered. First step in solving any problem is recognizing there is one. America is not the greatest country in the world anymore. Enough?
Live from the Bloomingthal Performing Arts Center, the Playhouse. This is The Last Word with Michael Lawson and our senior producer, Thomas Wardenberry. Well, Thomas?
How are you, Michael?
I cannot believe the security getting into this building from 2 years ago.
Wow.
I mean, they got more people, I see more security than people in the building.
It was mini Fort Knox out there. Very strange. Almost as if there were a national convention coming, Michael.
You think? Well, I tell you what, but we're broadcasting live from the Blumenthal Performing Arts Center, the Booth Playhouse. We are backstage for the Nota School of the Arts production of Schoolhouse Rock and the great Rodgers and Hammerstein production of Cinderella, which we're going to see. And we're going to have the head of the School of the Arts, the Nota School of the Arts, and some of the performers live right here in the midst of their rehearsal. And the Nota School of the Arts, for those people who don't know, we're broadcasting from Charlotte, North Carolina. This is August the 3rd, 2012. The Nota School of the Arts is a children's theatrical group that was put together, and this is their 8th annual summer theater intensive study. This is their what they have done. They have performed so well as a start out organization that it's amazing. Matter of fact, some of the what they did was they started out in 2005 as a non-for-profit summer arts program for children in the neighborhood along North Davidson. This is in Charlotte, North Carolina.
For the renovation of North Davidson. You know, when they kind of resurrected it from the collapse that it had been going for the last 50 years.
Yes, that's true.
The Renaissance.
It was a diverse area of blue-collar workers, musicians, and small businesses. And Nota, it reminds me of the Village in New York City.
Yeah.
It is.
Maybe like Soho.
Oh, I'll tell you. Absolutely. With the charming restaurants and the museums. And
all those little art galleries. Love to go to.
And full of smart people. Full of smart people.
Well, creative at the very least.
Okay. Amanda Womack, a former social worker and the first executive director of the school, believed that the arts could transform a child's life.
I think you know that directly, do you not?
Yes, I do. I've learned, she said, that it is not enough to give traditional services. The kids who succeeded found a niche, and they pursued acting, painting, music, and theater opened doors to new worlds. And during the last 6 years, the school has flourished. You know, its location fluctuated from time to time, from year to year, making it the school without walls. In the words of executive director, the present executive director, Kelly Brown, who you'll hear from in a few minutes, the focus remains on the underserved. Each summer, children from grades 1 through 12 enroll in a rigorous 6-week program that culminates in a Broadway-style production open to the public.
And this year they're going to be doing, what, Cinderella?
Well, they're going to be doing Schoolhouse Rock and Cinderella.
Oh, yeah, Schoolhouse Rock for the younger kids.
And, you know, Cinderella. I mean, wasn't that just in the movie?
Yeah,
with,
I think that's a little bit different then.
Oh, so they're not going
to. No Huntsman.
No Huntsman?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think this is more the based on the musical, Whitney Houston.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Came out a few years back.
Well, you see, well, that's what we're going to find out when we finally get Kelly, who has just come in. And
the beautiful Miss
Kelly.
And
she will give us the lowdown on the.
Performances. But I'd also like to know more about this school without walls.
Well, that's true.
Artistic endeavor that's helping children.
Well, this is we're going to talk about that. And Kelly is now the present director, and she's been director since February 2009, and she joined the Nota School of the Arts in the first year as the director of the musical theater. She has continued her role as teacher and director. As deep and genuine love for both the theater and children. She received her bachelor's in fine arts and theater with an emphasis on broadcast television and from Valdosta State University in Georgia. 1995, she performed in Raisin in the Sun, which I tell you, my mother was one of the first black, if not the first black theatrical agent in New York City, female. And she put on plenty of off-Broadway shows, and one of her first ones was Raising the Sun, and Fiddler on the Roof, which I loved. She didn't do that one, but she did other ones. That's right. And Kelly is the wife of Reverend Howard Brown, who's not here today, but will be here later, from the He's the Pastor of Christ Central Church. And they have two beautiful boys. Welcome, Kelly.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This is really exciting.
Well, this is the – hey, listen. I'm telling you, I just saw a little bit of a teeny bit of a rehearsal out there, and I can see you fretting. But that is normal.
Yeah.
Everybody goes through the frets, you know. And what seems to be, you know, what they said about the what's the young lady's name? Squirrel. That just
Gabby.
Gabby. Yeah. They said she will never make it.
Yes.
They didn't think she was going to win the anything.
Right. And look at
and
her now.
She won
everything.
Gold.
Yes, she did. Absolutely.
She was flawless.
She was.
So the things that you see, the people coming in don't see.
Well, you know, there are several things going on for me. I'm a director, and I have relationship with the kids on the stage, and then I run the school. So I have a lot of different hats that I'm wearing. And the director in me comes out pretty flamboyantly in these last few hours as we're preparing for the stage, because this is what we've worked for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we came for 6 weeks. They started on June 25th. We always start the last week of June, and we run in through the first weekend in August. And our shows historically have been the first weekend in August.
Mm-hmm.
So this program.
Well, that's kind of fast.
Well, it's a little bit nuts.
You think?
Yeah. Yeah, it is less than a lot of college kids in theater have to prepare for a show. It's less than anybody on Broadway you would see would have. For the level of performance that we're doing. Now, we could do 6 weeks and sort of just do something in a high school auditorium and, you know, have moms and dads kind of make costumes and throw in a CD and that kind of stuff. But the level of performance and excellence that we're striving for, to do that in 6 weeks is sort of bananas. We do believe in we have a high value for the arts, for theater, for performance, and for all disciplines of the arts. But our summer program is also designed to get kids who otherwise would have nothing to do off the streets, supervised in a positive, constructive event and activity for the summer that has long-standing impact in their lives outside of the arts.
Well, you know, I taught 9.5 years at Northwest School of the Arts.
Yes.
And I created the media literacy program and the television studio and television program there. And the kids that came into that program, the whole idea was they were good in their discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Or trying to get into a discipline where they were good at. And you can tell these kids are good in school for one thing, because they can't be good in their discipline unless they know how to listen.
Yeah, that's right.
So they carpent, what do you call it? When you put things in compartments, compartmentalize.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they do it quite well.
Yeah.
Because they are able to see that they don't have time to fool around.
Right.
This is a short window.
Yes, it is.
And the thing is, first of all, How many of these kids go to the Northwest School of the Arts?
I do have quite a few, and that's for two reasons. I haven't counted lately. I'd say I might have somewhere between 8 and 12 of them.
That's all?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's all.
Where's the rest of them coming from?
Well, oh, gosh, they come from all over the city of Charlotte.
Why did the Northwest School of the Arts?
Well, many who started with me when they were in elementary or middle school, because of their summers with the Notre School of Arts, asked their parents if they could go to an art school. And so when they got to middle school or high school, they went to Northwest School of the Arts as a direct impact of their summer with us.
Mm-hmm.
They came and discovered that they loved theater and they loved musical theater, mm-hmm. and they wanted more exposure and more training year-round, which is something I wish I could give them. We're not quite at that level yet. And so they enrolled at Northwest School of the Arts. And so I have multiple kids who started off with me prior to when they started at Northwest School of the Arts. And then I have a handful who found out about me and the Notre School of Arts during their high school years and thought, man, this is an opportunity that I'm not getting at Northwest School of the Arts. They do fabulous work, and they do really excellent productions with their high schoolers. What I kept hearing was, I don't get a chance to get a lead role.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when they come here, the way we do the audition process, it's not based on whether you're a freshman or a senior. Mm-hmm. It's not based on whether you've been here 1 year or no years, mm-hmm. or 5 years. It's based on your talent, mm-hmm. and your attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we cast the show. And so the Northwest School of Arts kids found that they had better chances, mm-hmm. to get major roles with my productions,
mm-hmm.
than they might have at Northwest School of the Arts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you get these kids. Some of them, have any of them not ever been in a production,
yes.
or ever acted before?
I have several.
Uh-huh.
I get into a dilemma because they come one summer and they don't want to stop coming. So they end up having a lot of them, most of their stage training and experience through Notre School of Arts. But every year I have kids.
And they're not, so when they leave here, they just go to a regular school.
They just go to a regular school.
Absolutely. And these regular schools don't have music or
art? A lot of CMS schools
don't have it because they had to get rid of those programs, right?
Yes.
So really, then during the year, they're not doing anything in the arts realm.
No, not necessarily unless they do it with us.
Right. But, mm-hmm. but this program's not all year round.
Well, historically, when we started in 2005, we started with our summer program piece,
mm-hmm.
and then during the school year, we offered arts training. So after-school arts training in all disciplines of the arts. We've done everything from watercolors to learning how to draw on scale to African drums.
So this is not just being a thespian.
No, this is about having
you
a well-rounded... Yes, a well-rounded, absolutely,
okay.
You could. And we have kids that come and they created, this was a few years back, young men created this art piece. It was, I don't know as much about the fine art side, but he, it was a class on shadows,
mm-hmm.
and their goal was to draw a football. And they had a subject that they were drawing from, and he finished and he looked at it and he said, I can't believe I did that. I did not know I could do that.
Mm.
And I didn't believe that if you taught me how to do it, it would look as well as that looks.
Mm-hmm.
That came from me.
Mm-hmm.
So the exposure that they get and kind of the discovery,
mm-hmm.
in the arts for things that they had either no access to,
mm-hmm.
or no interest in prior to blows their minds. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it really helps them understand more of who they are as a person.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing that really gets me is that I grew up in a family where all art was available, very lucky. And my mother, the smartest person I ever met in my entire life,
mm-hmm.
and even smarter than me.
Anyway, Mom's always are.
I know she is, and she could draw,
yeah.
with either hand.
Wow.
Ambidextrous. She could draw with either hand.
Wow.
As exceptionally well with either hand. Mm-hmm. All, I should say all, but 90% of the women in my family are artists.
Wow.
My daughter, well, my oldest daughter, is an excellent artist. And she, when she was in high school, she was living down with my mother in Orangeburg, South Carolina. And I was in New York. And my mother was saying, you know, I want to go. I want to go into the art school. The director of the one of the colleges down there at Worcester College
Orangeburg?
Orangeburg.
South Carolina State?
South Carolina State wanted her to come there. And then there was another, I forgot what other school in South Carolina was pursuing her, wanted to give her a scholarship for art.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, no, I can't draw. I say, yes, you can.
Yeah.
I got some of the pictures up there. And she said, no, she wanted to go into the military.
Oh, man.
And she went to National Guard. I mean, she's not National Guard, but she was ROTC.
Mm-hmm.
And then she went to National Guard. Then she went over to Desert Star 1.
Wow.
So, anyway, but now she's coming back. And I asked, you know, well, this is years later, you know. And I still have these pictures. I'm looking at, you know, why don't you pursue this?
Yes.
And she says, well, I just never think I had the time. But everybody was telling you you had the time. So now she's starting to get back and draw a little bit. But my youngest daughter was more like me. I went to aeronautical aviation, and I studied I'm not a flowers or a face. I'm oblique objects and the aircraft design.
Right, okay.
She leaned more that way, and that's why I wanted to get her into the School of the Arts.
Mm-hmm.
But when we got to the School of the Arts, they stopped that particular drawing in 93.
This is Northwest.
Northwest, right.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was not there. She couldn't draw anything else.
Mm.
Abstract drawing.
Sure.
So, but, and then I have a cousin who's an artist, lives in Canada, and she's just producing her own film now.
Mm.
And she it's ex. She's got offers from some well-known money people in Hollywood that said, we will produce the next film you want.
Wow.
That you want to do.
That's incredible.
So, well, so the thing is that the women's side of my family were, and I got some of that, and some of that rubbed off of me. But my mother was in, as I said, one of the first, if not the first, black female theatrical agent in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in theater, I mean, and nightclubs, 5 years old, sitting on strippers' laps. I mean, I was 5 years old. So, yeah, but performing Raisin in the Sun,
mm-hmm.
And I can't think of the young man that played in the movie To Kill a Mockingbird, who was on trial.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of his first groups. It was the Dryden Lawson Theatrical Agency. She had her own group that she produced, and he was the star in Raising His Son.
Ah.
And James Coburn, mm-hmm. The movie actor Armand Flint, you know, she got him his first break on Broadway.
Wow.
So there was there was so much in dealing with putting on a play.
Yeah.
But your pressure is to get it done from people and from kids,
yes,
who have not been professionally trained.
No.
And some of them are doing this in the summer.
Yes. Yeah.
So how do you get their mindset in a period of less than 6 weeks?
Well,
to this point,
people will tell you that I rule with an iron fist.
I'll ask Howard about that.
Yes, I'm pretty sure he'll agree. I have some experience in teaching. I'm not a teacher by trade, but I have lots of experience with kids.
Mm-hmm.
And because of my experience with theater and the stage and my familiarity with it, I want to make sure that they have a professional experience as opposed to just kind of disrespecting the stage, disrespecting their talent. And so I come in with a very serious attitude.
Mm-hmm.
We years ago when we started, we called this camp.
Mm-hmm.
A few years back, we decided to drop that terminology because it brought down the wrong connotation.
Right.
You know, fun is a byproduct of what we're doing this summer. What we're doing is producing a show. And so I tell my parents when I talk to them and interview them, this is hard work. they will have homework. They will be tired. They may be irritable. They may come home crying because they didn't get the role that they want, and they may get fussed at. I tell them, I may yell at your child. I won't disrespect your child. But I'm very honest and upfront with them, and I don't expect them to disrespect me back. I'm a little bit old school that way. I think that's part of why
it
helps.
But you had to look. I saw the look in your face.
Yeah. Oh, yes, they know. They know. And I think that I try to communicate to them, this is not about me or my name or the Nota School of Arts. This is about you understanding what gifts God has given you, the talent that he's given you, and doing things as a reflection of that, in excellence, in decency, in commitment. And we just do not let them have much wiggle room for that. And, you know, I think my staff and I take it so seriously, and they see that, and it brings them up to a certain level. And the children who come for the first time, generally the most of the 6 weeks, they have no idea what I'm talking about. Some of them have never even seen theater professionally before. They've done things at church or something like that, but never seen a real production. And so something happens, they get on the stage, they walk into the Booth Playhouse, which is part of our formula. This stage says excellence. This stage says legitimacy. This stage says that you are not somebody who's just a kid running around on the stage. So they walk in here and they're just like, oh my gosh, this is like a real stage, and there's a crew here, and there's wires and cables and lights and curtains, and they're overwhelmed, and they've been
people out there who paid to get in.
That I don't know. It's not my grandma. I don't know these people sitting in the audience.
Grandma's pitching it for
exactly. They do. And that's what happens. After they get on, they go on stage, they do their first number, and the audience starts to clap, and you can just see this transformation on their faces. And they get it. And then oftentimes they get hooked. And some of these kids, you know, they're not children that will be making it on Broadway. Some of them are super talented, and some of them are just committed and love what they're doing. And we want both of those things. We want everybody who comes to have more of an appreciation for it. And if you've got the talent, then great. That's awesome. But whatever you have, whatever you do on that stage, you know, theater has a way of making such a lifelong impact on you.
Well, you know, I was also privileged to be, my mother got me as extra in a couple of movies. One movie was Odds Against Tomorrow, Harold Belafonte and Robert Ryan, and Winters, Ed Begley, and it was about a bank robbery, and we were off from school for 2 weeks. And we got paid $25 a day plus $2 a day extra for lunch.
Oh, wow.
Every
That's
day.
Big money.
And that was big money.
Yeah.
You know, a long time ago, 1959. So I said, I had a good chance. My mother knew the director and the AD, one of the ADs here, and I could have gotten in any amount of films I wanted. But I thought it was so boring.
Did you?
Oh, honey, we sat there.
You did.
And we sat
especially
there.
Especially on set.
Got there at 6 o'clock in the morning. And sat there at 12 o'clock before they even called our name. And they didn't want to know if we were there. And then we did one scene. We did one scene from 10 o'clock in the morning till 7 o'clock at night. They had to bring out the big mirrors to make sure that it still looked like daylight.
Wow.
I mean, it was cut. Oh, this didn't work. No, cut. And I said, this is ludicrous. I don't want to do this. You know, but then years later, I said, you know, when I was teaching the kids how production was and what the director does and what the AD does and what the grip does, all this, I'm saying, you know, I'm putting this all in my mind now. I said, you know, that's how it's done.
Yeah, that is how
it's done. But before we get to kids, I need to ask you, how does the Nota School of the Arts function?
How do we function?
Where do you get your money? How are you able to put this together?
Yeah.
At the booth.
It's a challenge. We are a nonprofit, so we offer service to a community of people who would otherwise have a hard time paying for or getting access to that service. We're unique to Charlotte because we are a all-kid cast. There are other summer theater programs out there, They tend to be 5 weeks shorter, at least three times more expensive, and they culminate in a small production. So we're a little different.
You're at the Booth Theater. You're not at local high school.
Exactly. And we target underserved, underprivileged kids. So most of our cast is brown.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not all of our cast, because we know that it's just not true that only those folks have underprivileged or underserved needs. And underserved for us means that sometimes mom and dad both have big-time jobs. They work at the bank. They don't have time to go half-day and pick somebody up and then go back home and all those things. So we want to get kids, working families, their kids a chance to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So because we're a nonprofit, we raise our money, a great deal of our money, through grant writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the grant writer. We write grants with the Arts and Science Council. Yes, exactly. I wear way too many hats,
yeah.
I tell you.
Mm-hmm.
The Arts and Science Council, we've received a grant from the Panthers Charities. We've received a grant from the Foundation of the Carolinas, from Speedway Charities over the years. Anybody that has an affinity towards children and theater and helping underserved folks.
Mm-hmm.
So we write lots and lots of grants. I write lots and lots of grants. As you know, with grants, you get maybe half to a quarter of those.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, we have a couple of corporations that partner with us for the summer. Brica Baby is new to Charlotte, and I think it's just called Brica now, BRICA, and they're located uptown. They came on new to Charlotte, and you know, you find people who have an affinity for theater,
mm-hmm.
even though they run a business
right.
that has nothing to do with theater.
Right.
And so they found out about us. The president came to one of our shows with her little girl and thought, hey, this is something I really want to support. And so
mm-hmm.
they've picked up some support from us. We do individual donations. I go and ask people for money. folks that have known us for years really have consistently given to this cause and been able to buy a ticket and see their investment right on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have three churches that support us. We were sort of birthed out of the church, and so we get some support both in dollars and in kind support from those three churches. And then that's it. From there, we've used a new tool that the Arts and Science Council started called Power to Give. It's an online fundraiser, similar to Kickstarter, if you've ever heard of that. And that's been really awesome for us. We just raised quite a bit of money over that. And it's just exposure. We try to take the kids around during the summer to different venues. A lot of times people aren't even sure about NODI. They don't know where NODI is. And NODI is short for North Davidson. It is the city's designated arts district. I'm from St. Louis.
Greenwich Village.
Yeah, it's a good. They're on the way. It's a little small.
But I've been trying to eat at some of the restaurants. Yeah. But I've been trying to eat most of the restaurants, but I like the other one. What's the place that we like?
Cabo Fish Taco.
They're
good stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, and before the recession, NODI was filled with galleries.
Oh, please. I know. I never even knew about NODI until 6 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little secret. It's not as widespread
through
the city as you would think.
So where are all the galleries now, babe?
Many had to shut. They had to shut their doors. They just folded. Economy just tanked on them.
You know, one of the side benefits, if you will, bad word, but benefits of the recession
yes.
is that when you start losing everything, like the arts and the funding in schools,
right.
all these parents and organizations
are
that
looking.
You're talking about, they
yeah.
start realizing what they've lost.
Exactly.
And, you know, sometimes they're saying you don't know what you have until it's gone.
Yes.
But that's one of the good things for your funding.
Yes.
People will start coming in and saying, hey, you know, I'll help.
Yes.
Because no one else is.
Because we cannot lose this. We cannot lose this exposure for our kids. We can't lose this kind of activity. You know, my mom was a single mom. She worked three jobs to keep from going on welfare. Sometimes she still had to go on welfare. And I have a younger sister, so I would wake her up in the morning, get her and I fed, get us off to school, lock the door, come home, get dinner started, make sure my homework was done, make sure her homework was done, make sure the house was clean before Mama got home from work, put my sister to bed. So she just didn't have the time or the money to afford anything for us during the summer. And the summer was especially difficult because we just sat at home all day.
Right, right.
And, you know, things happen. Trouble finds you, even when you're not always looking for it.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure these kids have something to do, something positive, constructive. Yes,
and bring out
necessary.
And bring out that inner self that they don't know they have themselves.
That's exactly right. All while entertaining Charlotte.
Right. And now, how can people get in touch with you to if they want to be a part of this great, unique performing arts organization?
Well, I would love for them to email me at Kelly Brown, and my name is K-E-L-L-I-E, Brown like the color, at notaschoolofarts.org. They can certainly come to one of our shows this weekend and grab me.
And give us those, you know, what the shows are. Let's see, the Schoolhouse Rock, and that's the age. What's the ages for Schoolhouse Rock?
The Schoolhouse Rock cast is first grade through eighth grade.
First grade to eighth
grade. So I've got some seven-year-old fellas in there, little guys, all the way up to 13.
Okay, that's what my grandson is.
Okay, all right.
Okay, now, and that's going to be $12?
That's $12.
And that's what dates, what times are those?
It opens tomorrow, Saturday, August 3rd, and Sunday, I'm sorry, Saturday, August 4th, and Sunday, August 5th.
And what times?
Those shows are at 2 o'clock.
All the Schoolhouse Rock shows are at 2 o'clock?
The Schoolhouse Rock shows are at 2 o'clock.
Okay.
We wanted to make sure we didn't run into folks needing to put little ones to bed and decide not to come.
Okay, but my grandson, he stays up to midnight. He fights sleep. He does somersaults.
Oh, my
goodness. And he'll stand on his head. Look, I can do it. No, you're going to be in the bed.
That's
right. So,
I wonder where he got that.
Yeah,
from.
Right. And then Cinderella, which is tonight, 7
Cinderella
o'clock.
Cinderella opens tonight here at the Booth Playhouse at 7 o'clock.
And when is the others?
Tonight, Friday night, Saturday, August 4th, and Sunday, August 5th.
All at 7.
All at 7 o'clock.
And those tickets are $15?
$12 for children 12 and under,
okay.
And $15 for adults.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the general admission is, okay, that's the general admission. Okay. So, we need people who want to be a part of this great, unique organization. And for those of you listening out there, you don't have to have a child to be a part of this organization.
No, you don't. We have lots of young singles who just are so impressed. They come and see the show, and I think they expect some kind of, you know, little mom and pop, that was cute.
Yeah.
And they come and go, gosh, I felt like I just saw legitimate theater for $12 or $15 in Charlotte.
Yeah.
You can't beat that. And they get excited about it. And so many of our donors are folks who don't have children.
Mm-hmm. What's the ages for the older group?
They're high schoolers. I have freshmen, sophomore, juniors, and seniors. And I have one fella who graduated this past summer.
Mm-hmm.
And he really struggled, tried to get himself enrolled in school out of state, had some things break down, didn't quite have the support from his family that he really needed. And so he ended up just being here in Charlotte and was looking to get a job, had a hard time getting a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, then what are you going to do? And he says, I think I'm just going to come back to Notre School of Arts. And he is actually playing the prince.
Oh. He's not a frog or anything like
that.
No,
not a frog.
Okay.
He gets to be a prince
the
whole time.
Hold on. Okay. Yes. Okay. Well, at this point, why don't you see if you can round up some of these.
Absolutely.
These, give the headset back to Thomas. And we're going to have some of the cast members here in a few minutes. Well, what do you think, Thomas?
Is absolutely fantastic.
Oh, yeah, they're coming in already. They're ready. Oh, my gosh, here. You have a chair? Let's see. Oh, well, that's good. Now,
hello, ladies,
we only have the one microphone, so you have to pass it back and forth. Yeah, you're bringing her in. Watch this. I'll watch this.
I'll talk to you just like this.
Okay. And, you hold it.
Do
you
a favor and introduce yourselves real quick.
Right, and the part you're playing.
That's true. And Cinderella.
I am Nia Lucas, and I am playing the Queen.
The Wicked Queen?
No.
Oh, the Queen. Okay.
Queen Constantina.
Oh, Queen Constantina. Okay.
I'm Bria Hill, and I'm playing the stepsister Joy.
Oh, you got to be big. Yeah, you guys, stepsisters are always see you. Well, I have five stepsisters. They're all great.
And I'm Maddie Peacock, and I'm playing the stepsister Grace.
Oh, okay. We got two stepsisters here and one queen. So these are your stepdaughters.
Queen Constantina, who's the fox's mother.
Oh, the mother.
Of the prince.
Of the prince.
Yes.
Okay. Because we're talking about Cinderella and the Glass Slipper. Okay, see, I get that. Well, see, I'm looking in the recent movie Cinderella, and she was kind of mean.
Yeah, I'm not mean. I'm actually really
okay. So you don't have to do any magic or anything like that?
No.
Okay, good. Now, how long have you been acting? And your name is?
Nia.
Nia?
Yes. This is
Nia what?
Lucas.
Nia Lucas. Okay, what school do you go to? Okay, and what's your grade?
I'm going to the 11th grade.
11th grade, okay.
Yes.
Now, how long have you been an actor?
I would say about 3 years now, because when I started for NODA, it was my first year acting, doing anything, and I loved it. So.
You never acted before?
No.
Ah, and already 3 years you're a queen.
Yes.
Gee, okay, and your name is?
Thomas. Bria Hill.
And what school do you go to?
North Meck,
okay. And what grade are you in?
11.
You're in 11 too, okay. And how long have you been an actor?
I started when I got here, so it was 8 years ago.
So you've been acting for 8 years?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And Mike, I think she might be the play clown.
Oh.
This is
okay.
In her official biography that she
yes.
likes to act silly and have tons of fun.
Oh.
We know who causes trouble.
Okay. Now, your name is?
Maddie Peacock.
Maddie Peacock?
Yes.
Okay, and what school do you go to?
North Meck also.
And what grade are you in?
11.
So you're all 11th grade?
Yes.
Okay, how long have you been acting?
I've been acting for 5 years. NODA was the first time that I've ever acted or gotten in front of people. So 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Have any of you, you're two North Meck and you're Archer Hill. Okay. None of you, or you couldn't get into Northwest School of the Arts, or you couldn't?
Or,
I never tried. You didn't try either?
I never wanted to go to Northwest.
Oh. Well, I used to teach there 9.5 years. I mean, I taught.
Well, I thought, interesting thing about
television there.
Miss Maddie.
Yes.
So it said that you actually did not like acting at all before. So has this experience been an awakening?
Oh, yeah.
Coming out?
Audition to get into NODA, I actually cried because I was so nervous to get in, and then I went on stage and sang, and it was the greatest thing ever, and now I'm in love with acting. I love it.
And you love singing?
Yes. I love
singing. Uh-huh. And you never sang before?
No. Ever.
Never, ever, ever?
Never, ever.
Maybe in the shower?
Okay, maybe in the shower.
Oh, okay.
Not in front of anybody else.
Okay. And you? Oh, yes, what?
What's the question?
Oh, that's good. No, did you ever think about acting?
No, my mom put me in this program because I was really shy. So she wanted me to just branch out and meet new people, and it really worked.
That's one way to get over being shy. Center stage. Get out there.
And what about you, young lady?
I actually never even thought about acting. I've always been a singer, but my dad pretty much forced me instead of having to come that summer. So
how long have you been singing?
Since I was about maybe 3 or 4.
And what do you sing? Are you singing in church or singing in school?
I sung at church. I sung at school.
Mm-hmm.
I sung everywhere.
Mm-hmm. But all three of you never acted in school production before.
I have.
You have?
Yes.
What production?
It was Crazy for You.
Crazy for You. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so this is really, I guess, in the last 5 years, a new experience for all of you. Okay. And what have you gotten? Is my question. And your name is again?
Nia.
Nia and Bria. Nia and Bria. And Maddie. Okay. What, Nia, Bria, no, you're Bria. You're Nia. Okay. Nia, what have you gotten out of this?
I experienced self-control. I've experienced ways to meet new people and kind of break out of my shell a little bit. I've experienced how to it's hard to explain. Like when you haven't done something in a while, or you haven't even performed in front of anyone, I've learned how to come over my nerves, and I've learned how to
like right now, listen.
Learned a little confidence.
Yeah.
Well,
you see, there's a question I'm gonna ask you, but I gotta ask you all this stuff. You now, Bria.
Yes.
Well, what? Oh well, she's ready. You're ready. What have you gotten out of this?
That's trouble.
I've learned how to work in groups with other people because I like to be an individual, and I don't really like to work with other people. But this has taught me how. And like I said, I was really shy before, so I've learned how to talk to other people without being nervous or timid.
Mm-hmm. Maddie?
I've learned to actually be a performer, because before this, I never was on stage or anything, and I've gained a lot of confidence from this and just breaking out of my shell and stuff. So. Yeah.
Okay, now the question I need to ask you is now, is Kelly really the Wicked Witch?
No, people think, because she does yell. She yells very often because, we talk a lot and we need to control that. But when it all boils down, she really cares for us, and she really shows how much she loves us with everything that she's done for us. And I've only known her for 3 years, but I already feel like I have this close relationship with her, and I really appreciate her.
Did she give you that to memorize?
No, she didn't.
Okay.
Well, actually, one thing I was going to ask, Miss Kelly was talking about, that she really respects the theater, and she brings that to her class, to her training, that she says, I'm going to teach you to respect yourself and to be up on stage and treat this seriously instead of just playing around. So is that something that you've learned, like a respect for the theater that was different?
Yes, I have. I've learned a lot just from being here, just from learning from her and what she's experiences she had, and she's just been a great mentor, and I really thank her.
Well, there's an old saying that people say some of it was true, some of it wasn't true. Laurence Olivier, who's a great thespian stage actor. You ever hear of Laurence Olivier? So Laurence Olivier? He's a famous English actor on stage.
Showing your age, man.
Yeah, well, anyway, Laurence Olivier, you ever see the film Marathon Man? You ever hear of it? Okay, you need to rent that film. Okay, he plays a Nazi war criminal. He's got money diamonds hidden in a New York bank, like Dustin Hoffman is in. Anyway, the guy was saying he was having trouble with a role, and he said he was trying to psych himself up to get into the role. And Laurence Olivier told him, look, you don't have to do that. Just try acting. So when you get out on the stage, are you the person that is in the dress or the costume that you're trying to be? Or are you still yourself acting like that person?
No, you're more... It depends on how close you are to the person that you're acting. Like, since I'm the sister, I'm really silly. So it's easier for me to be silly than dramatic. So I still have to get into a character mode and not myself, because myself would be a little more, not serious, but more sarcastic. So you still have to change yourself and make sure you are in character.
Okay, but when you change yourself, a lot of times people can see that you have changed yourself. How do you get the performance to reflect that this is not Bria, this is that character?
Practice. Yes, you got to go home and practice your faces and your movements. It comes down to every little thing, and then by the time you practice all this, it kind of comes natural to you, and you just can snap into that character, and you'll be totally different from what you are.
I was curious on something this short. How much practice do you have put in every day?
A lot, and then you have to go home and do it too. So they want you to go home and practice your lines. She always says, get in the mirror and practice your faces and move your eyes and realize what muscles you didn't even know you had. So
Maddie, do you, when you go home and practice, do you practice in front of brothers and sisters? If you have a parent or whoever, grandmother, the dog, the cat, the bird, the fish? I mean, what do you, who do you practice for, or do you feel it's not necessary to practice in front of an inanimate object?
Oh, it's definitely, I mean, you have to practice at all times, so it doesn't matter if you're practicing in front of an inanimate object or inanimate, whatever. So I practice in front of my brothers and sisters, because I have little brothers and sisters that are really.
And what do they say?
They just laugh at me because they don't understand what I'm doing because they're so little, so they don't really understand.
But you see, maybe they understand. They say, oh, okay, you're not going to do this right.
they probably do that behind their back. It's probably stuff they're not telling me.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, have you noticed, just like Bree said, you notice a muscle that you hadn't moved before. Do you notice that when you're in the mirror?
I think you do, but at the same time, you can feel it on stage. Once you're on stage, you get this adrenaline rush, and you do whatever you can.
Well, you know what I used to tell some of the students that I had was that at the time, we didn't have all the automation with the cell phones and things now. I said, hey, just take a video camera of yourself and act in front of the video camera. And you can see a lot of the things that you, the inflections that you don't, you might have, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But now, you all have been acting, learning your lines for this role, these roles, for how long now?
I've actually been kind of lazy over the summer, so I just learned my lines about 2 weeks ago. but the good thing about that is I do know my lines, actually. And
we'll see tonight.
I'm waiting for the good thing about this.
The fact that I'm double casted, so I won't be performing until tomorrow.
Oh.
So Saturday night, everybody come out. You know, it's going to be a great show. But anyway, like I was saying.
And you're going to be playing who now? Queen
Constantina.
Yes. Okay. So you won't be doing that tonight?
No.
What are you going to be doing tonight?
You're going to be practicing.
You're a villager. So yes. Queen Constantina isn't in the tonight? What's she doing?
Yeah, she is. The other girl who's doing it is somewhere right now, but we're double casting.
Okay.
Are doing
right. Okay. Yes. Bria? I know. What's the question, man?
Yes.
Bria's like, why are you bothering me?
You, how long has it been you've been trying to learn these lines?
Well, this year was a little awkward because we auditioned and then Maddie wasn't here for a whole week, so we couldn't get which stepsister was which because she wanted to see her act too.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to wait a whole other week to get my role because she wasn't here.
Way to go, Maddie.
So you two go to the same school?
Yes.
Mac, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So it only took me about 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Because once you're there every day and you have to do your, like, scenes every day, so even if you don't practice at home, no, I'm just saying, even if you don't practice at home, you kind of get it anyway. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
2 weeks intensive training here. This is pretty interesting.
Absolutely. Maddie, how long have you been studying?
Well,
you're gone.
Bria says, yes.
Oh.
I went to New York City.
Oh, you did? Where? See, I'm from New York.
Oh, you are.
That's right. Brooklyn?
New York.
Yep. Okay, where? Manhattan. And what'd you do?
Yeah, that was my first time, actually. So
really?
Square.
Oh, so all the Disney things and everything down there. The Times Square ain't like it used to be.
I like it a lot.
I was down there my whole life. My mother had her theatrical agency was on 1674 Broadway, which was right across from, did you see the CBS building, the I?
Yeah.
Right across the street, the Eagle building. That's a landmark building now. So they tore down all those balloons around us for that and CBS.
It's very bright there.
Bright, you think?
Yes, there are a lot of signs.
A lot of signs, huh? Yeah. Well, hey, it was a lot more brighter when they had all the clubs down there. I mean, it was wall clubs. But, you know, now it's the cutesy colors and everything because Disney is 90%.
It's Disney 5.
Yeah, it's Disney 5.
It's different, Mike. We're talking about different eras.
And where else? Where did you stay there?
I stayed at, I think, Ramada.
Okay.
Sure where I stayed at.
And on the west side?
Not really sure what side.
Not what side? But you were close to Broadway.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So you're probably, the Ramada, I think,
like
is on.
4 blocks away.
I think it's on 10th. You got to walk.
Yeah, like
from the water?
Close to
was it near the water?
A little.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah, I know it's not. It's surrounded with. But, so, now, tonight's show, when you get out there, it's just like when I used to play baseball, Central baseball, you know, and you're nervous. Don't tell me you're not nervous. You all are nervous when you get out there. But that's what makes it good. If you're not nervous, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
You're dead. You're walking, and you don't know you're dead.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And when you get out there until you say your first line, or do you do maybe your first thing, but mostly your first line, then everything seems to pass, and it's like you're at home.
Right.
So I want you guys to go out there today and break a leg. Not literally, but break a leg and have a good production, which I know you will.
Of course.
All right. Nia, Bria, and Maggie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. And that is, we had two of the stepsisters and the queen here.
The evil ones.
No, I don't know. They're not the evil ones.
Not so.
No.
Not two stepsisters.
Well, now we're coming to the part of the show. Oh, we got two more? Three? Oh, come on in. I didn't know. See, I was taking time with them because I didn't know more of the cast members were coming in. Holy cow.
Look at these uniforms.
Tell us who you are. See, I gave the girls all this time. You girls, you guys cheated these two guys here. They took it. See, girls always taking up all the time.
Exactly.
And your name is?
My name's Matthew Pitt.
Matthew, and where do you go to school?
Northwest School of the Arts.
Oh! I used to teach there. Not any of you. Yes, any of who's the principal?
Melanie Sears.
No, she wasn't there. Who's the assistant principal?
Mr. Gore.
Mr. Gore. You go to Northwest School?
Yeah,
I just graduated from Northwest.
Okay, I taught there. I created the, I taught media literacy, and I created the film and television department.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the library. I started that. Who's the librarian?
Rick Romanek and Miss Buchanan. Yeah, Jesse.
Don't know them either. And your name is?
Jordan Medley.
Jordan Medley?
Yes.
And you just graduated? Where are you going to go? You going to college? You going to?
Sure. Point Park University in Pittsburgh.
Ah.
More acting there or just regular?
Musical theater.
Musical theater, good. And what did you major at Northwest?
I started out as a music major, actually. I played violin, I still do, and I switched my major to musical theater.
Okay.
And directly because of this show being related to being in this program, or is it just something you picked up along the way?
Something I picked up along the way.
Okay, and your name is Jordan?
Yes.
Okay, your name is?
Matthew.
Matthew and Jordan. Okay. Matthew, what did you go to Northwest to act or
yes,
do several songs or what?
I went to Northwest to do musical theater, acting, singing, and dancing because of this program, Not Our Food, The Arts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, we got somebody else here. Are you guys just kibitzing? Anyway, so you are doing, you're playing who?
Tonight I'm playing an ensemble role, and tomorrow I'll be playing the Herald, Lionel.
The Herald.
Yeah.
Now, I don't remember the Herald from Cinderella, although I wasn't really much of a Cinderella. I did have two daughters, so I had to read
that
story.
You've got to remember this is also that adaptation.
Oh, right.
It's
okay.
Slightly different.
Oh, slightly different. Okay. And you're playing?
The role of the prince.
You are the prince.
There are two princes.
Ooh. Two princes.
I am the other.
There's only one shoe, though.
That's the truth, yes. There are, yes.
So are they going to be fighting over the shoe?
Probably, yes.
Each grab a foot. Go.
Each grab a foot, huh? Okay.
Yes.
So, what's the, as I asked the young ladies over there before you, Bria, is this not going to be like Cinderella we saw in the movies?
No.
Little magic and people disappearing and huntsmen checking down.
The Nona version of Cinderella.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Now,
not
you know,
the urban fantasy, vampires versus...
No, none of that? Okay.
No.
Oh, that's terrible. So how long have you been? You are not main, Jordan. You weren't going in as an actor when you first went through high school then.
Right.
You've never acted before until you came to Noda School, yet?
I had done some in middle school. I did a production in my middle school. I did Annie. And I was
Annie, okay.
The butler.
Okay.
But when I got to high school, I was like, I don't want to do that. And I decided not to do it. But my sophomore year, my teacher, he begged me to be in the class. He's like, we need more guys. So I was like, okay, I'll do it. And I did it. And from then on, I was obsessed. And I was like, stuck on it. So
this was where, at Northwest?
Yes.
Who did you see?
It's Corey Mitchell. Yes.
Why is that name Corey Mitchell? But she hasn't been, is that a guy?
Yes.
He's at performing arts. He's the performing arts teacher.
Yeah.
Okay, no, I don't know him. I know Dr. Charles LaBorde, who retired. Matter of fact, he's the one who got me to go to the school to teach it. Your name again is Matthew. Matthew. Okay, Matthew. Tell us, why did you decide to go to the performing arts, Northwest?
I came to Noda my first year when I was 6, turning 7.
To this
yes.
school? Is that right?
Yes. I was.
Are you the oldest remaining student? Like, as in, you've been here longer than anyone?
Me and Bria.
Oh, gosh.
How long has Miss Bria been here?
Me and her, we've
18
years.
Wow!
Well, I came here because my mom, she saw a flyer up at the neighborhood theater in Noda. And at first I was really like, I just want to sit at home and play video games. Just leave me alone. I really don't want to do anything. And my first year, I kind of liked it. And also I'll return next year to see how I really feel about it. And the next year I got my first lead role was when I really fell in love with acting. I liked singing, but that's when I really fell in love with acting and dancing.
Now, acting on the stage and acting in the movies are two different things.
Completely
two different things.
World, yeah.
I mean, because this is, you only get one shot.
Yeah, exactly.
Kelly ain't going to say, cut, let's do it over again.
Yeah, like
that ain't going to happen.
No.
So you got to be on all the time once the curtain goes up.
100% of all the time, whole show, you have to be completely focused and on point. No, yeah.
Got to be on your A game.
Kind of like that Warner Brothers frog. Yeah.
Well, you know, and see, this is the thing now between film acting and the theatrics on the stage is because I found it film when I was involved with it, even as an extra, to be awfully dull because it was hurry up and wait. But once you get that thing goes up, that curtain goes up, you know, it seems like does it seem like a long time when
goodness.
It starts or it's over?
Oh,
it seems like, is it going to end?
It feels like it drags on sometimes. I think it depends on the show because I also did a West Side Story at Northwest School of the Arts, and that dragged. It was a great show, though. It felt like it was forever because we were sitting backstage a lot of the time. But I was
well, it would be cool because they have a lot of long dance numbers.
Yeah, they do. They do. Actually, I was probably on stage a lot of the time, too, because I was a jet, so we danced a lot in the show.
Oh, so you dance, too?
We danced a lot.
Okay, you dance, Matthew? Okay. Yeah, and see, that's one thing. But you're busy.
Yeah.
But you're busy. And so it's not like your mind's just sitting back there thinking about other things. You're thinking about what you're doing. So it's, what's up next? But there, in this particular production, is it more acting than dancing or singing?
There's way more acting in this production and singing, way more acting and singing than dancing.
Mm-hmm.
There are only actually really two big dance numbers, the opening number and the opening of Act 2, which
mm-hmm.
is the waltz for the ball.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else, strictly, you have the acting is, yes, there's a lot of emotion in it, and the singing, lots of songs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you guys, how do you feel that, I mean, I always want to tell you, pretend they're not here. I mean, are the guys better actors than the ladies?
Depending on what scene we do and the how much chemistry we have with each other.
You have to help them along sometimes.
Okay, girls.
you got to help them along,
guys,
right?
Yeah, we got to help them out sometimes.
Yeah,
just,
right.
You know, get a little too cocky sometimes.
Oh, is that right? Oh,
Look at that face.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I can see that when they're here and they hog the chairs and they didn't even tell me you guys were out there.
There you go.
Yeah, you see, yeah.
Part of the course.
Now, I asked you the same question I asked them now. Does the director, Miss Kelly Brown, does she use a whip on anybody?
No, but I'm pretty sure if she could.
Oh, if she could, she would? I know.
People, you might, if you want to do it yourself, it's a guess.
Is that right?
Yeah, you're like, okay, guys, all right.
Well, you guys are... as you already said, you've acted before. Do you play any instruments?
I've started playing the guitar. I never really finished it up, but I'm planning on going back to guitar lessons. Because
yeah.
I really miss it.
I got a grandson, 3-year-old, but he just turned 4. I bought him a guitar, electric guitar, when he was just turned 3, because he loved it. He plays it left-handed. How do you do that?
Ooh, I don't know.
He got it because, I mean, you got to have it. Because who's the one? Is it with the Rolling Stones? He has left-handed guitars? Or the Beatles? No, it was one of the Beatles, right? It was left. But you got that has to be made because you can't find them.
Yeah,
he's got it upside down and he's playing it. I mean, you know, what the deal with that? I understand, but so he.
Oh, Johnny B. Goode, didn't he do left-handed?
I don't remember. But I know, I think she's one of the Beatles or one of the people in Rolling Stones plays left-handed guitar. But I want to thank you guys and need a break leg.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. And don't leave these ladies. You know, just make sure, throw them a line when they miss it sometime, right? Throw them a line. Okay, you know, yeah, don't let them hang out there. You know, yeah, just don't.
It's on now.
Don't let them. You know, see how they are. Yeah, they need a help tonight. Don't lie. It's just get your whispers. You know, so they know. You know, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
You know, Mike, we're gonna start a fist fight right here. In the
well, that was the idea. Anyway, all right. Thank you, guys.
Hey, best of luck.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, ladies. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. What time you guys are you guys gonna eat before you yeah? Well, you know, maybe you shouldn't eat before you do this.
It'd be better if you're all weak and shaky.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Okay. The cast. That was the cast. Let's see if we have any to now we're going to get to
the darker side?
The dark side of the, you know, first of all, I mean, I wanted to, before this came up, because this I think was fabulous, this interview.
Absolutely, it's fabulous. This gives me hope, you know, because
and,
there's someone bolstering this community. It's promoting culture again, filling the void from the depression. Oh, I'm sorry, recession. but this is helpful. This is helpful to our community. I love this. I'm so proud of what they've done here.
And this is the Nota School of the Arts, and Kelly Brown is the executive director, and you can get Kelly at 704-281-0906 at Kelly Brown at Noda, that's NODA, School of arts.org, all one word. And you need to come down and see this production. They're having the Schoolhouse Rock. It's $12 for all the ages, and that's going to be tomorrow at 2 and Sunday at 2. Is that correct?
For the younger, right. Younger's at 2 and the older's at 7.
Right, and the Cinderella is going to be at 7 o'clock tonight, Saturday, and Sunday, and that's $15 for adults and $12 for children.
Where can you get those tickets, Mike?
And you get tickets at General Admission and online at Carolina Tick, T-I-X, one word, 704, yes, .org. and that's 704-372-1000.
Come out and support your community.
Come out and support this fabulous school of the arts. I mean, to tell you,
some of these kids have been out here for 8 years now.
That's 8 years.
Fantastic. Doing something right.
As I said, we're broadcasting live from the Blumenthal Theater, the Booth Playhouse.
In the midst of the renovation of downtown.
Now, let me tell you what was just passed. August 1st, the Affordable Care Act passed services for women that never was done before.
Never
in history. Healthcare services go into effect as of August 1st. You can get free contraception, well woman visits, STD screenings and counseling, breastfeeding support and supplies, domestic violence screening, HIV screening, HPV testing, and gestational diabetes screening.
Fantastic.
You mean
that evil act?
That evil act
is helping people?
I don't
quite understand. I thought this was supposed to be the worst thing that ever happened.
Evil act. Yes, that evil act.
Well, we don't call it the evil act. We actually call it Obamacare. But so the Obamacare destruction of American industry, the advent of communism, is actually helping people and actually providing services. So we're going to enable women. We're going to allow them to get help in America.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing.
Yes.
Let me look over here. Here's the thing that we have representatives who say that they do not want this to go through and are trying
to repeal it,
to repeal this particular act, all these new and affordable.
It's free.
No
copay, right?
There is no copay.
Okay.
This is what the doctors have to do. This is what the doctors have to do.
So
they need to give you free. This has to be done free. Now, the thing that is so bad about it is that these same ignoramuses who do not want women to have the ability to have free access
screening
aren't
counseling.
Given, you know, hey, if they don't want the rest of the act, that's fine. But what about these 9-8 things I just read out? Why don't they create a bill with just those particular things in it to help women?
Right. Because that would actually help women. I think that's the problem. So anything to prevent health. Anything to prevent easy access to medicine, to affordable care, to screening, to counseling, any of that we need to do away with. Is that the message we're getting?
Oh, well, what they say? What they're saying, oh, no, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the rest of it. Oh, the rest of it. Yeah, the rest of it. Like taking your child off the health care plan.
Right. Not providing care for your children in college, right?
Right. And then we could go to, well, should we go to, you know, let me say that for the last. I thought about Mr. Kissel.
Oh.
But see, that's another story, so we don't want to get there. We'll get there in a few minutes.
Well, we'll cover him because we're talking about people who are trying to block or repeal this very act that we're talking about.
That would
include Mr. Kissel.
You think that would do that? Well, you know, right now we have on the phone someone who is going to tell us all about it.
resident.
Did it take you to find this darn thing? How long did it take you to find that music?
Oh, it took a while. Sorry about that. Hey, we're operating by a stage, you know.
Listen, you know, Red Casey was I liked him far better than Dr. Kilby. You know what? Dr. Kilby,
yeah.
He was trying to get a date. Red Casey was trying to cure.
Marcus Welby.
Yeah, he was a country doctor. We had a good show here so far. We were interviewing the kids from NOTA and the performers at the Booth Playhouse here are going to start tonight. But since that was great for the first half of the show, but tell me, the Affordable Care Act, on August 1st, now women have contraception. They're able to have women visits, STD screenings, breastfeeding support, domestic violence, HIV.
Yes.
I mean, how can these moronic womenizing representatives now say we don't want the Affordable Care Act, but why don't they just pass a bill that has these 8 things in it? They won't even do that.
They've managed to spin it so that, I mean, when you hear the Tea Partiers and the Republicans talk, they've managed to spin it so that what they're saying is that this is an impingement upon their religious rights, their religious freedom. That's the way they've managed to spin it. And that's a really, really sad and inaccurate way to talk about it, because what they're trying to say and what they are saying is that this particular aspect of the Affordable Care Act takes away the freedom. Like if they're saying that you must, that all religious institutions must provide birth control. That's not exactly the truth. Yes, they must. We talked about this before. If you are an employee of a church, okay, then yes, just the church itself can say, well, we don't particularly want our health insurance does not cover birth control. Yeah, absolutely. That's within their rights. However, if this church, if this religious institution goes into the daycare business or the school business or something like that, then guess what they've done? They've crossed into the world of commerce. Once they've crossed into the world of commerce, they are no longer only and solely controlled by the separation of church and state. They no longer fall into that tax-free bracket and tax-free
right.
bracket alone. Okay? Now they've crossed into the world of commerce.
Mm-hmm. Well, but you see, if out of this 8 things here, the only one, the first one, which is contraception, just say something. They say, okay, the administration says, okay, good, you can get rid of that. Why don't they write a bill that adopts the rest? What are they afraid of? Why don't they want a domestic violence screening? Why don't they want an HIV screening or gestational diabetes screening? Why don't they want that?
Because they have managed to spin it so that it sounds like if they provide these things, it encourages promiscuity among women. And as we all know, women don't participate in sex. Right?
Hey.
Women have no sex drive. We all know that.
The neo-Taliban here. So one of the problems I have with this is the smoke screening effect when they use contraception or you know, whatever red flag, one item that you want, but they're using that as the screen to deny the entire act, because the truth is they don't want the entire act.
Right.
But the conception of the lie is that they're trying to block all of this evil that's going to infringe upon religion. But that's the red herring over in the corner. It's just the excuse. Because like you said, you can line item any of these things and find the one millionth of an item that you could write an exception to or ignore or get around. But all of the rest is 100% legitimate.
Well, you good.
But they don't want to do it because it's pure obstructionism. And the main reason for this obstructionism is clearly to do what Mitch McConnell said, which was to make Barack Obama a one-term president. That is their sole and only goal. And so their idea is to, they don't care about the country. They just want to obstruct so that nothing gets done. So that the country can go to 18 pebbles to that talking stick, you know, and they can say, well, look at what, you know, Barack Obama has done. Nothing.
Right.
I mean, that's it. That's it in a nutshell. It all comes down to that.
What is? It is.
Well, the thing is that we're turning this around to talk about some of these congressional leaders who have, and you can call them blue dogs or dogs or whatever you want to call them, cantaloupe, I don't know. But some of them, and, you know, that come to mind, and the main one that comes to mind is Larry Kissel from the 8th District. And I just want to read you, and joining us right now is the president of the Black Leadership Caucus for North Carolina, the state Black Leadership Caucus, is Mr. Walter Rogers. Walter, how are you?
Good afternoon to everyone.
I just want to read you something here. You know, as soon as Larry Kissel got to Congress, he started to change. This is right out of a quote from the Blue America. And it says, the outspoken progressive champion wasn't quite so outspoken at first, and then he wasn't progressive either. The DCCC got him and told him that he hoped that he would hold his seat. He said, from the conservative. He said, he's a weak, insecure, vain, and vacillating, and a flippant candidate and representative. He started voting regularly with the Blue Dogs, and shockingly, after the great Blue Dog apocalypse of 2010, he actually joined the shriveled, shrunken caucus. Now he has no support among the progressives who elected him in the first place, and a Republican-controlled legislature has redistricted him in such a way that he can't possibly win. Recall a minute ago, this is what happened. Obama scored 53% in North Carolina in 2008. Under the new line, he would have scored 42%. Kissel is toast, and he has virtually no chance to beat a corrupt Republican establishment hack named Richard Hudson, who won the GOP primary a couple of weeks ago with a gigantic cash infusion of Chinese prostitution money via Sheldon Adelson and Eric Cantor. A real Democrat would be able to make that work, but not Kissel. He has no credibility with anyone. Yesterday, Think Progress reported that he's now trying to take credit for the benefits his constituents are starting to get from the Affordable Care Act, which he voted against, and then joined the GOP to repeal it. Larry Kissel voted against the Affordable Care Act in 2010 and was one of the five Democrats who support the repeal of the law earlier this year. But opposition to health care reform hasn't stopped the two-term congressman from taking credit for it. And to a side note here, in June, Kissel bragged about helping to secure $379,000 in federal money provided by the Health Care Act for a new health care clinic near China Grove in Rowan County. I'm glad to have worked to help secure this funding and will continue to make sure that the tax dollars are being spent here at home to put people to work and to take care of our citizens, Kissel said in a release. And then Dodge reporters who pressed him on the hypocrisy. Now, what are we to make out of that? Walter?
Well, I take out of that the New York Times here 2 years ago where they spent a week in the 8th District trying to interview Larry Kissel, and he ducked and dodged them for a week. So I shouldn't find it real unusual that it's the same old game. Now, it's unfortunate that people have invested their time and effort to try to make things work with Larry Kissel, but he has, you take Larry Kissel and put him on a side with Mr. Hudson and put the issues all up there, and their response would be the same. So yeah, if you can put Larry Kissel on one side and Richard Hudson on the other side, but when you get to putting the issues there as far as what their response would be, they're the same, we got a problem. Because one is supposed to be a Democrat and the other is a Republican.
Well, just think, it's my goal that Kissel is sitting here taking credit for something that he is actively
that's obvious, a bunch of just shows the hypocrisy of the individual.
It's just breathtaking, though.
Yeah, that just shows the hypocrisy of the individual. As a matter of fact, somebody wrote an article this week about the hypocrisy of the congressman. He's voted against the bill every chance he's had. However, he did vote for it one time after he discovered that his vote would not make a difference. But even this last time, his vote didn't make a difference, and he still voted for it, against it.
Right. Well, now, Grace, they said here, it says, Larry Kissel said that he's heard from hundreds and hundreds of people from his district that have opposition to the health care law. I mean, do you actually believe that?
Grace.
No. Yeah, Grace?
I have a really hard time believing that. I really do. But then again, you know, maybe they're just not counting the people that, maybe they're not counting the people that are calling, or B, there are people like me who say, why bother calling? He ain't going to listen anyway.
Well, the thing know? I can't, why vote against?
Well, first of all, Grace, I would probably say, unless he has certified validation of all those hundreds of people, I wouldn't believe it. And second, the bill is a 2,800-page, the law is a 2,800-page document, and the things that are in it, a lot of the people don't know it, because I would be willing to bet you that the people that, a lot of the people who are against it don't know what's in it. Like, you know, Michael and I were talking last night that a bunch of the things that went into effect just, when was it, yesterday? The first. Procedures and all the medications, people just don't know what's there. And a 2,800-page document?
Well, now, let me ask you this, Grace. Your position there. How do people find out what's in their new Affordable Care Act?
You know, here's the unfortunate thing. What you have to do is to go to thomas.gov and download the whole thing. But that's the bad news. The good news, you don't have to read the whole thing. The good news is that there's a search button, a dialog box at the top, and you just have to type in what it is you want to find out, like, you know, oral contraception or birth control pills or women's rights, and it will search the document for you and then pull up for you everything that that pertains to what it is you wanted to search for.
Well, but do our own private doctors know?
No, private doctors, most time, no. I mean, you're not going to quit. Doctors don't have the time to sit there and go through this whole thing, no. I mean,
and you know, that is...
That?
Grace, you know, that is so important because you could go to the doctor and have to pay for something that, according to the new health plan, you don't have to. So, you know, people are going to have to come up with a method for learning what's actually in it that benefits them.
Okay, so we've got two sharp people on the line here. Tell us, people, Walter, Grace, how does the public find out what's in this if they don't have a computer?
I might be tempted to start with some congressman other than the one in the 8th district and the 7th district. Then I might be going to my state governmental agencies. There are state agencies that ought to be able to help you with that. I'd probably start with my state representative and ask him if he would to please help me to understand the guidelines or refer me to somebody that can help me to determine what's in it that really benefits me. I think it's real. Go on.
Medicare, you're right. Walter's right. You know, you can call Medicare, and they really do have to stay up on top of the laws that are being passed. But Medicare, Walter's hit it right on the head. Start with your congressman, and then call Medicare and ask them.
Would the local city health clinics, would they know?
Probably not, unless they've got somebody there, Michael, that they have specifically signed to research it. They would not have it, and it would probably come down from the state as to what they are now able to do.
Okay, but in those states where they got those Republican governors, it ain't coming down from the state.
Well, we're now talking about people who have stuff that they have access to that they're not receiving because their Republican governor says that he's not going to take a part in the health care program. So the people suffer because of the governor's personal prejudices.
Okay. Now, but it's just like in Florida, I believe it was over 60 or 70% of the county, board of elections said that they're not going to listen to the governor and they're not going to ask for IDs. So, I mean, are they independent enough, these healthcare services in these various states, where they don't have to listen to what the governor says and because the law
Well, if the governor has refused the revenues, Michael, the state treasurer would not have it, would he? And it would not be available to be used to reimburse anybody, would it?
I don't know.
It would not be there. It won't be there. That's right. If the governor refuses it, it won't be there. Just like our Cabarrus County Commission refused $75,000 worth of stimulus money that was slated to help the poor people last winter to help them, you know, with their heating bills and insulate their houses. Right. So, you know, the need is there, but the Cabarrus County Commissioners refused to accept the money, so the money's not there.
Well, Grace, in situations like that, you got a November election, and I believe there's some county commissioners that are up for re-election or not.
Yes, they are.
And people have to remember those people who refuse them the services that are actually available. You know, that is ugly. As a matter of fact, you might call it hypocritical because when they take the office as a public servant, they obligate themselves to take their personal feelings out of doing what is in the best interest of the public.
That's correct.
Well, but, you know, the thing that gets me is that we have 36 Republican governors who have refused to accept the I don't know if all of them refuse to accept the health care, but they refuse to accept different portions of this. And if they're going to do that, it's going to be...
Well, I don't believe they have an option of picking and choosing. I don't know. I haven't seen any law or anything to say they have or have not. But I would suspect that the federal government would say you're either participating or you are not, because you're not going to milk out of it what you can claim is in the benefit of the Republican Party and leave that part that would benefit the citizens and the low-wealth people of your state.
But it ain't a Chinese menu. You can't pick one from column A and one from column B and then echoes. Can't do that.
You're either standing on the steps blocking the door or you're not standing on the steps blocking the door.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing that gets me is that most people, and I would say, you could go to a lot, most people out in the rural communities, a lot of people in these big cities work every single day, are not sitting down like me, a drug addict with the all the news, and know every single thing that's coming down the line, like all of us on the line right now. They don't have a computer. They are not listening to the radio. All they know is when they get home, they want to eat, they want to watch a little TV, and they want to go to sleep. They don't know. How are we going to reach those people to let them know about these new programs that are with the Affordable Care Act?
Are you asking me that, Michael?
Yes, the vote drink race.
Michael, I would say that in life, those who have the ability to communicate with the ones who are not able to obtain, we have a certain responsibility, and it has been that way, especially in the African-American community, that grandma had to look out for the daughters, the granddaughters, and the great-great-granddaughters. And we just have to help people understand it. I think somewhere, Michael, we're going to have to put together those things that may be considered insignificant or minute to some people. But for those people who are trying to live off $200, $300, $400 a month, it's just too important to take for granted. And they have to use their money for things which the health care program would actually pay for.
Grace, I want to put this to you. I think it was started August 1st also. We're going to start seeing checks in the mail to people because the insurance companies now have to send you the reimbursement if they don't spend 80% of their premium on your...
Correct.
Now, I got my letter in the mail.
Your letter or your check?
No, I got the letter in the mail, letter telling me the check's in the mail.
Oh, okay. Good. Good.
So I ain't get my letter yet. Let me look at my letter. Oh, well, see, I loved it. But anyway, here's the thing. Are people, I'm going to tell you right now, people who get this letter in the mail are not going to know what they're talking about. They're going to think they owe them money. That's the first thing they're going to think. I owe money?
I owe 80% plus.
Right. Because
I bet you they don't send the check back, Michael.
Well, yeah. Well, but
that's right.
But yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But the thing is that all these things, these many things that are starting to come down now, when the foot is in the door and the floodgate is open, I mean, every submarine movie you've ever seen, when the ship is sinking and you try to close the hatch, you can't close the hatch because the weight is too much. So is this something, you know, does the president have enough time between now and November for this water pressure to sink that this is good? What do you think, Grace?
Grace? I can't hear you, Michael.
Yes.
Michael?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yes, yeah. I can now.
You can? You can hear me now?
Yeah.
I can hear you.
Okay. All right, I was saying, Grace, that is there going to be enough pressure, enough time for people to understand what the Affordable Care Act will give them between now and November, that they'll say, you know, this is really a great program.
It is something that we as individuals need to keep trumpeting because, you know, the way people hear the best is when you tell them their personal story. You know, you tell them your personal story. Hey, you know what? I just went, that bus control pill that I used to have to pay $35 for, it's free now. That's what the Affordable Care Act did for me. Or, you know, I had to go get my immunization and my tetanus shot or whatever, and I used to have to pay $15, and now it's covered by the new health care.
Colonoscopies.
Right. Colonoscopy used to be, you know, you had to have a copay. Now that copay is gone.
No, please don't mention that. My mind's coming up pretty close. Anyway.
Like this month.
I'm telling them, look at my wife. Well, I say, yeah, what? Did you get signed up yet? I said, yeah. I'm working on it.
you were lying, didn't you? You were lying.
Yes, he did.
You can't put anything back.
So now, what are we expected to do when you have a representative? This is not a democracy. This is a representative government where we send somebody to represent us in D.C. Does our official expect us to do when he doesn't represent us?
Walter, take it away.
Yes. The main thing you need to do is, you know, I keep going back to the conversation that the Grand Master had with Larry Kissel back a few years ago in Anson County, where he told him he needed to decide whether he wants to be a Democrat or a Republican.
You need to understand what Grand Master. Who are we talking about here?
The North Carolina Prince Hall Grand Master, Masonic Masons.
There's another grandmaster that you could have been talking about, too, so I just wanted to make
sure. I was not referring to the Lord.
Okay, no, I'm talking about the Lord.
He was talking
either.
About the Klan.
Well, if I'm in his presence, Michael, I would suspect that it wouldn't be the whistle of the Ku Klux Klan. He told him basically that he really needed to decide. Told him that he might be able to thank the Lord that he did not live in the 8th district. The deal is, and this comes from the heart. I think that the people of the 8th district needs to decide what they want as far as a representative. And on election day, they need to go out and they need to decide. They want to elect somebody that they know is not going to represent them just by the fact of the party that they belong to, somebody who claims to be from the Democratic Party but votes with the other party, or somebody who has a genuine interest in your well-being and is committed to work with your president and your Congress to benefit those to work to get those programs out and working that best identify with low-wealth people.
Well, the redistricting of the 8th district has not changed the status of the wealth in the 8th district.
And, Michael, that is very important because economic deprivation, lack of benefits, that is not a color thing. That is an economic condition.
Absolutely.
And when you're talking about Davie, Roran, and Davidson County, you know, they are, you know, I don't know what the unemployment rate is, but I would be willing to bet you that there's not that much difference in theirs and the average unemployment rate for the other old 10 counties in the 8th District. Now, Scotland County is in terrible shape. Is that 17.6, Michael?
Yep.
17.6%. And if you're living in a county that has 17.6% unemployment and your congressman doesn't want to have anything to do with the party that he's associated with or the existing president, we're in real trouble. Real trouble. And we're going to just have to decide. You know, it's something that we need to people are going to have to decide on, but they need to look at it from an economic perspective. They also need to keep in mind that the president has worked hard, and the game has been for the Congress, the Republican-led Congress, to deny the president everything that they possibly can, then to double down and say, look what your president has not done while they have voted to disallow him an opportunity to do it. So,
well, one of the things that I am just so baffled by is that these people, if Romney, by the slip of faith, had the chance to become president, why does he feel that any program would be passed? Everything would be the same because the Democrats would do the exact, and they should do the exact same thing. They should say the same day that he gets elected, he will never be elected again.
Well,
why doesn't one watch the other? I mean, we're in a time frame here where we have about 80 representatives, 80 people in the House that are holding the entire country
hostage.
Yes, exactly.
They're holding the entire country as a hostage to try to get rid of the president.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right.
That's exactly what is going on. And it is, you know, it is so frustrating. You know, a lot of times I sit up in the bed at night, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, trying to figure out why in the world would anybody hate and dislike a person so that they would hold an entire country hostage just to try to get rid of the president.
That's amazing, especially when you think that these are the people that trumpet all the time family values,
mm-hmm.
and that they are the patriots. You know, they have the flag and the bumper sticker, but they're the ones that are destroying. They're the ones that are holding everybody back. They're the ones that are literally preventing money from flowing.
You are absolutely yes, sir. You are absolutely right. And what they will do is they will try to deflect the attention from what they're doing to somebody else or something else, so you will not pay them any attention. But now, Michael mentioned Mitt Romney. And, you know, people have a right to vote for anybody they want to. But, you know, if every time you turn, somebody was catching you in a lie, and then you're going to tell me that I need to vote for you because I need to trust you. You will not disclose your information, but yet and still you want me to trust you enough with your economic life to vote for you.
Well, you know,
I can't see it.
The thing that's really amazing to me, is that here is, say, President Romney, who would have you believe that he is just an ordinary man.
Yeah, he
when he has health insurance for all five of his sons and his 100 other grandkids and relatives and whatnot, for 50 million Americans who are without health care, 13 million people are unemployed. And listen to this, when the poverty rate is 16%, and where he just tore down a 3,400-square-foot house costing $12 million and is going to build one 3 to 4 times larger, bigger, that utilizes a 4-car elevated garage. This man on $10,000 bets with his other Republicans, when he can afford to outfit a horse, the rider for the horse, $15,000 it costs to outfit that rider for that Rafalco.
And
Michael, he spent $77,000 on the upkeep of the horse in 1 year. He spent $77,000 on the upkeep of one horse per year. How many people in this country make $77,000 a year?
Or talk to some of the people from Bain Capital whose retirements and everything just disappeared.
Right.
Then they sold the industry after buying it. The people's retirement went kapluk. Their insurances went kapluk. Then he sold the place and made millions, and the people went home without retirement, and they too old to retrain for something else. And now is the time. Remember when he was talking about the social net that was supposed to catch the poor and disenfranchised?
That's right.
Ask him where is it. Ask him, can he show it to you now? Ask him where is the Republican Congress made sure that that social net that he referred to is really there and exists, and what can it do?
Well, there are, but you remember what he said, though. You remember what he said. He says, I am also unemployed.
Well, I'd be unemployed, too, if I could live off the interest of my money, and support my family and never have to bother with the principal. That is a fantastic and rather unique way to be unemployed.
I mean, give me a break. And he doesn't want to tell us how he makes his money.
Not only does he not want to tell you how he makes his money, he don't want you to know how much money he has, and he does not want you to know how much money he's paid on federal and state taxes. And I've learned this week that Mr. Romney, up until after he was almost governor of Massachusetts, had said he was a resident of the state of Ohio when he was.
That's right. Well, he was living in his son's basement in Massachusetts. He claimed that was his house. That's why he was governor.
And just to remember, he also wasn't the chief executive officer of Bain Capital.
That's right. He was listed as, right.
The sole.
Well, hey, this is going to get even better. And I want to thank my most interesting and informative guest, Mr. Walter Rogers, chair, president of the Black Leadership Caucus for the state of North Carolina.
My pleasure.
And chairwoman, Mrs. Dr. Grace Lean Galloway, chairman of the Cabarrus County Democratic Party. And I'm going to see you guys. You know, I'd like you guys, if you can, to come out and see this play, if you can, this weekend, Cinderella. It is going to be fantastic at the Booth Theater.
Michael, I appreciate it so much. I am volunteering to help Antonio Blue.
Okay.
Until such time as he has somebody else to work in my capacity, I'll be helping him. And every minute that I can sit at the table to do something to benefit him, I would. I did not get a chance to hear part of you all's conversation because I know there were probably some discussions about the Democratic Convention, who has tickets, where they are in North Carolina, what the Democratic Party is doing with the ones that they have, who can get them, who cannot, and all that stuff. I'm just sorry, but I missed that point.
Well, we're trying to do some research on that right now.
Okay.
We're going to do some research on
that. Well, thank
you. Yeah, and we need to support these true blue Democrats. And
we don't need any more
We don't need any more dogs.
We need to make the dog an extinct breed. That's what we need to do.
I want to thank you, Grace. Kiss the baby for me. And just say hello to Papa Galloway.
Papa Galloway. Okay, I will. I'll tell Joe you said hey.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Bye-bye, you guys.
Bill.
Thank you. We had a good show today.
We did indeed.
We had a very good show today.
It's very uplifting to see people contributing to their society, not tearing it down. People building things up. People helping people instead of trying to take away.
Well, I'm hungry. You hungry?
I'm hungry.
I'm supposed to be going out to eat. I don't know. Maybe just go out and get something to eat, and we'll go out tomorrow night with my wife. We got to go out.
You need to go.
Yeah.
You know, I think you owe her a little one.
I owe a little bit.
Celebration of the yearly event.
Yes. Our wedding anniversary. We're supposed to be going out. We've been traveling. So, but hey, everybody. Hey, find out from your local leaders what the heck is in the new Affordable Care Act that will affect you. And remember,
it will affect you.
And as a former real crazy lunatic guy in New York City, used to be on the air. He might still be on the air. He must be 180. But he was the most, I don't even want to tell you, he was a pathetic. But the only thing that he ever said that I like is, remember, your influence counts. Use it. This is the last word, and this is the end of the show for this week.